Hi, it's Dacker. If you're like me, you probably have a wide variety of interests when it comes to your podcast listening. A little psychology here, a little history there, which is why I want to recommend a show perfect for those with eclectic tastes. Freakonomics Radio has more than 10 years and 500 episodes worth of answers to your biggest questions. But don't be fooled, it's not just for economists and business experts. Every week, Stephen Dubner dives into the hidden side of everything. With the help of guests, including CEOs, artists, and Nobel laureates, he breaks down all sorts of things, like how we choose the people we marry and why using swear words might be more important than you think. So don't miss out. Follow Freakonomics Radio right now, wherever you get your podcasts. Support for The Science of Happiness comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/happiness. That's odoo.com/happiness. Odoo, modern management made simple.
I'm not leaving without them.
You may be a clipper, but you're outnumbered and unarmed.
In the first season of Into the Badlands, I had the wrong approach to the role. I was thinking, you know, all these American dudes, when they do X-Men and all that stuff, they get really huge for the roles. So I need to get huge too. I gained 25 pounds of muscle in 3 months. I was so proud of getting that much bigger in such a short amount of time. And I walked into the training room to start doing the martial arts training. And I was like, oh, how come I can't even do a roundhouse kick right now? And it actually kind of hurts. Why is it hurting? I realized it was the stiffness that the extra muscle had caused with my body and just how I wasn't used to it. But it was that moment of not being able to move like I used to be able to move and realizing, oh man, I screwed up. It was really stressful because I was like, we're about to start the show. It's very martial arts driven. I need to perform. What can I do? So I spent weeks getting more supple. So a bit more yoga, a little bit more stretching to try and undo what I had done to myself. Wrong mentality. It was that kind of American mentality with I was trying to go for a result instead of going for a process that I knew would be able to get me to perform well.
Known as the Brad Pitt of Asia, Daniel Wu gets swarmed by paparazzi wherever he sets foot in China. Now he's making his mark in the U.S., his native country. Daniel is the star and executive producer of the AMC show Into the Badlands, going into its fourth season. On each episode of our show, we have a happiness guinea pig try a research-based practice for happiness, resilience, kindness, or connection. Today, we're excited to have Daniel join us as our guinea pig. We're lucky because if we were to try to have this show in Hong Kong, I think we'd have 1,500 fans outside beating down the doors. Daniel, thanks for joining us here.
Thank you for having me.
I have to ask. I mean, I thought I was working hard, but I think you've been in something like 65 films.
Something like that, yeah.
Sounds like it's about three or four films a year. How did you end up in film?
In 97, when I graduated, I went to Hong Kong to witness the handover, Hong Kong going back to China.
Yeah.
You know, as an American kid, you don't really get to take part in very many historical events.
Yeah.
And so I wanted that to be sort of my graduation trip. And within a month, I'd spent all my money. I was going to head back home. And then I was in a bar having a drink, and someone came up to me and asked me if I wanted to be in a TV commercial.
Seriously?
Yeah. And so I was like, what? And I was like, how much do you pay? They're like, $4,000. I'm like, okay, great. And so I did the job. A month later, a director saw the ad. He called me. He goes, I want you to play the lead in my film.
Oh, my God.
And I'm like, what? I don't speak Cantonese that well. I've never acted before. And so actually, I turned it down. And then every other day for a month, he kept calling me, trying to convince me to do it. And at the end of that month, I go, okay, look, if you really think I can do it, I'll give it a shot. But you can't blame me for screwing it up. Uh-huh. And then the first day on set, that's when I realized, like, this is what I want to be doing for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
So that's how I got up to 60-something in 20
years. And a lot of them
are
martial arts films?
No, not. Martial arts is my background, and I actually tried to hide it from the industry when I first started because Jackie Chan was my manager for 11 years. I saw Jackie's body, his state of what he'd put himself through and the repercussions of that and just having to deal with the pain all the time. And I was like, I don't want to be the action star.
Right. You breaks know? Down the body like any demanding sport.
I don't want to be 60 and not be able to walk. I'm only going to do martial arts on choice projects.
So you've had a long background in the martial arts, mm-hmm. and it connects with your dad?
Yeah, my dad did Chinese opera when he was in Shanghai as a young boy. And Chinese opera is a lot of the stories are about war and about fighting. And it's very stylized. It's stage fighting, basically, but it's acrobatic. Jackie Chan and all those guys came from those schools.
Is that right?
That's where his style kind of broke certain barriers, because it was no longer just martial arts. There was a lot of acrobatics. You know, when you see him jumping through a little tiny window or through the between the rungs of a ladder, that's more his acrobatic skills than his martial arts skills. But yeah, I think what really influenced me was watching movies.
Yeah.
Because as a Chinese-American kid growing up in the States, you didn't really see people like myself on the big screen
at all.
But on Channel 2, KTVU, in the States here, in San Francisco here, they had Kung Fu Theater on the weekends.
Really?
So I'd watch that all the time. Like every Saturday, I'd watch that. It was a double feature. And what really did it for me was my grandfather taking me to the Great Star Theater in Chinatown here in San Francisco to see Shaolin Temple, which was Jet Li's first film. And he goes, you know, all that kung fu movie you've been watching on TV is all fake. This is real, real kung fu.
You know, one of the really fun dimensions to this show, and I mention this a lot because it's so revealing, is you get people with these fascinating life histories, like your background and experience in film and martial arts, and sort of they look at choices in the science of happiness, and what they pick is always interesting. And
sure. So
you chose the body scan.
Yes.
And you had an early experience with a body scan with your dad?
Well, yes. When I was 7, I started doing transcendental meditation with my dad.
No way.
Which is weird, because I didn't think about it being weird then, but I look back in retrospect, it is kind of weird. He was having headaches, and I was having headaches as a kid. And my dad goes, why don't you try meditating with me? And so I think for several years we did this together.
Wow,
on the weekends we would sit and meditate together. And then once I got into martial arts, meditation became part of the practice as well.
Right.
A little bit different style.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. Yeah. So, I mean, obviously there's a lot of mindfulness meditation, mm-hmm. body calm in martial arts.
Doing it, I didn't realize it was called body scan in that way. I didn't know what it was at first, body scan. I just chose it. Body scan, that sounds interesting.
The body seemed attractive. Yeah. And
then I go, oh, this is actually meditation. I think a lot of people have taken yoga classes. You know, at the end of a class, you lie there and you check in with your body and you
savasana,
feel everything.
Yeah,
savasana.
So Jon Kabat-Zinn, I think, came up with the idea of body scan. You know, he was practicing yoga and meditation in the early 80s, so he translated it to these secular terms like body scan, but it does come out of the yogic tradition.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Walk us through what you did.
Yeah, so I actually listened to the audio, the guide on there,
just
to have the step-by-step process through it. And so it's basically, you know, you're lying there, eyes closed, and checking in with every inch of your body.
Notice your hands. Are your hands tense or tight? See if you can allow them to soften.
It's like you're scanning from your toes all the way up to the top of your head.
Let your face and facial muscles be soft.
And you actually feel stuff. I mean, you actually feel stuff releasing and letting go. I did it lying down, so I had a sense that, you know, once I'm fully relaxed, the body kind of sinks into the ground, right? It's actually the tension releasing from your body. It feels like you're sinking, but it's actually just your normal tenseness letting go a little bit. It's just like a quarter inch or, you know, an eighth of an inch, a little drop. You feel that, and then you know you've gotten into that state, and that's what I felt.
Be aware of your whole body as best you can.
By the end of it, I finished it. I could feel parts dropping and sitting and settling. And then finally, when it was over, I could feel, I'm in a relaxed state now.
And you walk through the kind of directing your attention to different, the hands.
Yes,
the feet,
and feel the tingling, kind of feel some motion. And sometimes I will move. I did move my toes a little bit and my fingers a little bit and my wrist or my joints and kind of articulate a little bit.
I wanted to ask you, you know, it's always a privilege to talk to longtime practitioners of this, both thinking about the body scan that you did for the show, but also just in general, what's it give you on a regular basis?
Definitely a sense of inner calm and peace. Mm. And in fact, I now realize, like, I thrive in chaotic situations. Like when things are crazy around me, I'm the most calm and the most settled.
Yeah.
It's about finding the calm in that chaos. When we're doing martial arts, we're constantly putting our bodies into stress and our minds into stress, so that when you go out there and face real stress,
find
the calmness in it. Because if you're in a high anxiety emotional state, that's really inhibitive. You know, if you let your emotions get over controlling you, then you can't act correctly.
So when you're acting, you're in this complicated scene and cameras from all angles and can you sense that, whoa, I'm in a mindful state of acting right now? And
you don't want to be in that. You don't want to be thinking about the acting. It's just like, I don't know, Bruce Lee always said, don't think, feel, right?
Yeah.
You want to get to the point where there's no inhibitions and you're not thinking, oh, there's 30, 40, 100 people watching me right now perform. You know, you just do it and you be the role and it comes out naturally. Same thing when I'm practicing martial arts. It's to the point where I'm not thinking about the moves anymore.
Yeah.
It's just flowing out of me. And same thing with the martial arts choreography in Into the Badlands.
Yeah.
It's very overwhelming because we have no time to rehearse all that stuff.
Really?
So we're learning each section of the fight as we go along.
Yeah.
I realize what choreography is taking your foundation, which is the letters you know in martial arts, a kick, a spinning kick, a punch, or whatever. Those are letters. And you're stringing them into words, and the choreographer is making those words into poetry, right?
Yeah.
And you're performing that poetry, right? And so if you know the letters, which I know I do because I've spent 20 years of my life doing this stuff, then I should be able to string all that stuff together and feel it and then feel the poetry. Once that clicked, I didn't worry about each move anymore. I was thinking about how my body flowed through everything.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the ultimate level, I think, of any art.
Yeah.
You know, a painter, a writer, or whatever. If you're not constantly going back and forth in your head about it and it just kind of flows out of you, that's kind of the best art that you make. You
know? Yep. Absolutely. And anything that we do, when you think about it. And how's your body holding up with 40, you know, all these fights?
Surprisingly good, because I did adjust my training practices through mindfulness of my body and realizing that it's about movement and efficiency of movement and also moving smarter as you get older. A little thing can screw you up for a long, long time, right?
Yeah,
and so I have to be really careful in how I train now. And so before, in the past, I would do 500 kicks a day. You know, I realize now that that degrades my body. So I maybe do 10 kicks a day, but I do them like super slow to make sure that all the muscles are checking in while I'm, like, say, let's doing a side kick, for example. I'll take 5 seconds to do one single side kick, you know, push it out and come back in. Whereas before, I was as fast as I can. I've learned a lot more about my body through that process because I've now developed true, like, inner strength. Before, you can use speed to hide strength, to throw something out there and hide it all. But when you really concentrate on form, the reason why martial arts is so form-based and, you know, your body has to be in this position to throw this kind of kick is so you don't get injured.
Yeah.
You know? And it's been studied for thousands of years. It's the most efficient way to use your body. And so you take heed to that.
Cool. You know, when I talked to Russell Lahn here at UC Berkeley, who leads our martial arts program, and just when I talked to him about the science of happiness and gratitude and respect and humility and, you know, mindfulness and breathing and compassion, he's like, it's embedded in the DNA.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, all those things that you just mentioned are in the foundation of martial arts. A lot of people, I think, nowadays, especially with the influence of UFC and MMA, think that martial arts is all about fighting. And,
and
martial arts is two words. There's the martial and there's the art. You have to have the harmonious balance of both. And I think MMA is a very typical American behavior, which is like, let's take the best thing of everything and make our own thing and
become put it
individual.
Into a cage.
Let's disregard thousands of years of study and systemic like work here and just put it in and make it a sport and make lots of money. You know? It's great. I like it. I enjoy watching it because it shows certain techniques, what works and what doesn't work. But it's not all that martial arts is.
Yeah.
So a mixed martial artist, oftentimes you'll see by the time they're 40-something, they're done. They're really done. I mean, they can't practice anymore. They can't do the exercise they were able to do anymore. Whereas if you look at it like a Chinese martial arts system, you have kung fu you can practice when you're young, tai chi when you're a little bit older and middle-aged. And then when you're really old, you can just sit and do qigong meditation.
I'm a little offended because that's what I gravitated to right away.
But qigong, no, but you don't have to do it in that. You can take one aspect or whatever.
Right.
But the point is there's a system there.
Yeah.
You know, and it's made for you to practice throughout your whole entire life.
Interesting.
And part of your lifestyle.
So, Daniel, what did it give you over the course of your life? Like, what are some of the things that it has put into your soul?
I think from a very basic level, obviously, discipline, perseverance. I think those things you learn, I learned at a very young age.
Yeah.
That if you don't put time into something, you're not going to get good at it. It's just simple as that. And I think it especially applies to modern days now with sort of our instant gratification society.
Yeah.
Where I see this with kids, not just millennials, but even younger kids, that, you know, if they don't get something within the first 5-10 minutes, they just give up. You don't see the work involved in what goes into that yoga pose you see on Instagram or that incredible move that someone's doing. But then there's other stuff, spiritual stuff.
Like what?
Finding calmness and peace within yourself, reducing stress and anxiety, like all those kind of things. Like I try to use all my practice to help with those things as well.
Here in Berkeley and increasingly so in the United States, it's just one of the great privileges. Our cultural identities are so multifaceted and interesting. And a lot of students have this one experience, which is coming from China or South Korea or Japan, and taking in, you know, California and Northern California and becoming this bicultural.
Right.
And you're going in the other direction.
Yes.
Which is you grew up here and now you
grew up here, went there, and now come back.
So what do you make of it all?
Well, it's been interesting. And, you know, for me, it was part of going to Hong Kong. There was probably something in my subconscious about searching for my own identity. I think growing up here, there was a sense of, like, who am I as a person? I need to find my identity. Now I'm very clear about who I am. It's not necessarily rooted in either or. It's kind of a harmonious mixture of both. And what I like to say is I'm really, and my mom used to say this too, is you're a person of this world.
Yeah.
That's all that matters.
Yeah.
And realizing that, it's just you find this kind of peace and levelness in how to move forward in the world.
Well, Daniel Wu, I know you're off hopping a plane pretty soon and
heading back to Asia for work.
For more work and more filming. And congratulations on Into the Badlands and good luck.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for being here on The Science of
Thank Happiness. Thank you for having me. This was really fun.
We'll be right back to talk about the science behind the body scan meditation. One of the things that I love about the body scan is that it is an easy, practical introduction to meditation. And it's a practice that really gets you to pay attention to what's going on inside your body. Research suggests that the body scan can help us reduce stress, improve our well-being, and actually decrease the physical pains that are part of our day. Here to explain why the body scan carries those benefits is UC San Francisco neuroscientist Helen Wang. She's exploring how mind-body awareness and meditation can enhance social relationships and improve mental health.
So for meditation and body awareness, I wanted to know, can we identify when people are paying attention to their breath or another part of their body, like the feet, or mind wandering? And it turns out that the technology is developed enough where we can start to identify these different mental states within each person based on their own unique brain data.
And what are you finding? How do you think about the brain benefits of these body scan meditations?
There's some studies that show meditation, you know, increases activity in the insular cortex, which is involved in paying attention to the body. The way I like to think about it is each part of the body has its own form of information and wisdom. Like the feet is more about balance and movement, and the heart may tell you more about relationships, and the stomach might tell you more about digestion and anxiety and intuition. So you have to go back to the raw signals of your body and then ask yourself, what messages is my body trying to tell me? I like to think of all of these messages as benevolent messages, even if they hurt, because it's trying to tell you there's something in your environment or your life that's not aligned with your internal goals and values. And then it's up to you to figure out, you know, what do I need to shift?
If you'd like to try the body scan meditation or other practices like it, go to our website, Greater Good in Action. That's ggia.berkeley.edu. And then email us and let us know how it went. I'm Dacher Keltner. Thanks for joining me for The Science of Happiness. Our podcast is a co-production of UC Berkeley's Greater Good Science Center and PRI, with production assistance from Jenny Cataldo and Ben Manila of BMP Audio. Our producer is Shuka Kalantari. Our associate producer is Lee Mengistu. Our executive producer is Jane Park. The editor-in-chief of the Greater Good Science Center is Jason Marsh. Special thanks to UC Berkeley's Graduate School of Journalism. You can learn more about the science of happiness and find related articles, videos, quizzes, all kinds of stuff on our website, greatergood.berkeley.edu. And shoot us an email. Tell us what you think about what you heard. Send it to greater@berkeley.edu.